Okay, it's 9 o'clock. We're going to get started. I think so.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We got 9. 10, 11.
Okay, we're going to get started, and we have the Pastor Joseph Clifford, which is Mayor Mike Rollins' pastor. Good morning. Welcome to the today's council meeting. It's a pleasure to introduce Reverend Dr. Joseph Clifford with First Presbyterian Church of Dallas, an ordained minister since 1997. Dr. Clifford arrived at First Presbyterian Church in December 2006. He is a graduate of Auburn University with a bachelor's degree of science and economics in 1988. And after 6 years in banking and finance, he answered a call to ordained ministry and graduated from Columbus Theological Seminary with a master's divinity and earned a doctor of ministry in preaching from Macomb Theological Seminary in Chicago. In his preaching, Pastor Clifford seeks to offer people a glimpse of their respective word through the lens of the Bible, considering what God might be doing in our lives, our community, and our nation, and our world. Thank you, Pastor Cliff, for being here with us this morning.
Thank you. Opening prayer is a poem by E.E. Cummings. Let us pray. I thank you, God, for most this amazing day, for the leaping greenly spirit of trees, for the blue true dream of sky, for everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. I, who have died, am alive again today, and this is the sun's birthday. This is the birthday of life and of love and wings and of the gay great happening illimitably earth. How should tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, breathing, any lifted from the know of all nothing, human merely being, doubt unimaginable you? Now the ears of our ears are open, now the eyes of our eyes awake. And all God's people say,
Amen. Thank you. Travel with little friend. Praise be. Goodbye. I'll be united with America. And we will all be one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Special recognition.
Brad, would you come up here? We all know how important sales tax revenue is to the city of Dallas, and you know how we always encourage everybody to shop local, keep those sales tax dollars in Dallas. And Brad here is with Sunnyland Furniture. He and his parents, Debbie and David Schweig, operate and own Sunnyland Furniture, which used to be in my district, but which is now in Linda's district. It's at the corner of Coit and Spring Valley, and it is a perfect example of a successful independent retail operation that contributes mightily to the city and to the community. I first met the Swigs when I was a councilperson, and they spearheaded a redevelopment and expansion of the neighborhood shopping center that they're located in. And it was a wonderful thing for that community because everybody really looked forward to the stores and the redevelopment and the new stores coming in because of the expansion. And I got to know them and enjoy that family tremendously. The Sunnyland Furniture store sells patio furniture, so I think the name is just perfect, Sunnyland. And like I said, they give back to the community in any number of ways, including spending advertising dollars with local media outlets. So, you know, they've given back to their community in many ways, and Brad spearheaded an effort to shop local, and so we want to recognize that effort today. Linda, did you want to say anything?
Well, Brad, it's been a pleasure getting to know you and your parents. Actually, Brad's dad went to my high school, so there's a relationship there. But Sunnyland, one day, called a couple of years ago and said, we have a little bit of extra patio furniture. Do you think the fire department might like that? I said, bring it on over. The fire department over on Beltline in Hillcrest now has some nice patio furniture kind of in a little area where they have a barbecue outside and everything. So they've done so much for the community. We're working on a project right now to put an enhanced sidewalk right around their property and over to the other side of Spring Valley and Coit. We've been working on that project a little time now, but I think we're going to finally get it accomplished. And for the actual Spring Valley and Coit area and some of the apartments and condominiums in there and townhomes, they always sponsor, it's just a wonderful event, they always sponsor kind of a day to recognize city officials. So they invite, along with the community, all the fire department folks in our area, all the police department folks in our area, their elected officials, and anybody else that has to do with really with the city, to come in for a free lunch. And they do kind of a little hot dog and hamburger lunch, and they kind of keep it open for quite some time that day. And they've done that almost every year, I think, since I've been on the council. So, you know, we all know one another in the Spring Valley Coit area. We're all good friends, good neighbors, and that's what makes us want to go to Sunnyland and buy our furniture there and shop local. So thank you for spearheading this. We really appreciate, you know, the efforts of you and your family. Thank you very much. Okay, so I'm going to start the proclamation here. Whereas in October of 2021, Brad Schweig founded ShopLocalDFW.com in order to connect local retailers and help support the local economy, and whereas ShopLocalDFW.com is a local organization that has partnered with the National Independent Retailer Month movement to promote local shopping and provide shoppers with a unique shopping experience in the city of Dallas, and whereas Independent Retailer Month is an event held in cities all across the United States, and ShopLocalDFW.com kicked off their event with a lunch and learn at Sunnyland Patio Furniture in Dallas earlier this month, and had over 30 individuals from local businesses participate, and
whereas Independent Retailer Month provides the time to recognize and celebrate the entrepreneurial spirit represented by our core of local independent retailers, and whereas Dallas's local independent retailers help preserve the uniqueness of the community and give us a sense of place, and whereas Dallas's independent retail owners and employees enrich community members' shopping experiences with their knowledge and passion, and whereas Dallas's core of independently owned retailers gives back to this community in goods, services, time and talent, and the health of Dallas's economy depends on our support of businesses owned by our friends and neighbors. And whereas we salute our locally owned independent retailers who are integral to the unique flavor of Dallas and honor their efforts to make Dallas a great place to live, work, and play. Now, therefore, I, Mike Rollins, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim Wednesday, June 20th, 2012, as Buy Dallas Day, and extend a special recognition to ShopLocalDFW.com for promoting local shopping in the Dallas area.
Thank you. This started back in, I guess, October of last year. I was at a seminar by the 350 Project. And for those not familiar with it, it's a national movement, the idea being that if people just spend $50 total at three different stores per month locally, not to abandon the big box stores because they have an important role in the community. Also, just try to spend $50 a month total at three different local independent businesses. And after attending this thing, we were with a couple other people here and kind of figuring out, how can we make this benefit our community? So we started ShopLocalDFW.com. We held an event last year for Small Business Saturday, which takes place after Black Friday back in November. We've had a couple of different events throughout the year so far, and now we're participating in this National Movement of Independent Retailer Month, which is this July. So we have a bunch of stores on board already, and we're getting more throughout the month of June. But the idea is to have a lot of stores to display the Independent Retailer Month, have specials, and kind of cross-promote all the independent retailers in Dallas as well as the North Texas area. The idea being that if you spend $100 at a local retailer, you'll keep $68 in your local community versus the less amount if you're spending money at a national retailer and next zero from an internet retailer. So we're just trying to encourage people to visit their local independent retailers and restaurants as well to support the local community.
Before you go away, sir.
Sandy, before you go
before
away.
Before you go away.
I still have a comment.
Thank you so much for promoting Buy Locally. Every opportunity I get to say to our community, my constituents, city employees, Buy Dallas. We cannot pay one single dollar of one police officer's salary, not fix one pothole of any dollar that does not come into Dallas. We are very conscious of how important it is for our residents, our constituents, our employees to buy locally. Thank you for helping us with that effort.
Oh, and I've just got to tell you, Brad's been married 45 whole days today.
Let it go, Brad. He blessed it. Okay, with that, Rosa, you have an open mic.
Good morning. For the record, the meeting began at 9:03. We'll begin with your morning speakers. Your morning speakers will be Valerie Kessler, Gary Stewart, Patricia Angel, Byron Montgomery, and Thomas Manoff. Our first recites the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to the members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timers on both walls. Please address your comments to Mayor Atkins. When your time is up, please allow the next speaker their turn. Your first speaker, Valerie Kessler.
Good morning. I am going to speak very briefly about fracking and the process. I do believe that all of you want to do the right thing by your constituents. In my opinion, the right thing is to protect the long-term quality of life for your constituents, to protect the well-being of your constituents, and to protect our resources, our water, and our parks. It's also critical that you hold public hearings on these issues. Only if you hold public hearings will the process be viewed as credible by your constituents. Only if you hold public hearings will your constituents be able to support your ultimate decision. So I urge you to please hold public hearings. Thank you so much.
Gary Stewart.
Mayor and Council. I'm Gary Stewart. I'm a board member of Down Winters at Risk, a local grassroots organization committed to protecting air in Dallas-Fort Worth and North Texas region, and I'm also an active member of the Dallas Residents at Risk. I'm here to do my part to represent the thousands who are supporting us and urging the city that if there is going to be fracking, it needs within city limits, it needs to be done as safely as possible with the strongest possible regulations to protect private health, public health, and the environment. There are certain six key points that I want to make. First is that we think there should be a setback of at least 1,500 to 3,000 feet from homes, businesses, schools, churches, parks. Even 3,000 feet, there's still a higher risk of being coming down with cancer from being exposed to the chemicals produced from fracking. Second, as residents, all citizens need to know what's in the fracking cocktail that is used in fracking. If Coca-Cola can publish its secret formula on their cans and still consider it secret because no one really knows what percentage it is, I think the city, or at least the gas company, can be forced to tell us what's in the fracking fluids. At least for our first responders, they need to know what they are being exposed to. Common decency requires no less than that. Third, water should be used for drinking in our city. One, we should not be allowing our water to be used, trucked out somewhere else for fracking purposes. And for the gas company or companies that want to do fracking, they need to pay more for the use of that water. Water that's used in fracking is gone forever. Period. There's no way to clean it. So even if they use 1% of Dallas water a year, that is gone forever. In 10 years, you would have 10% of our water sources gone. We also need to protect our parks and our flood zones. There should not be any fracking in parklands and on floodplains, and any fracking done nearby should be at least 1,500 feet or 3,000 feet. Also, there should be offsets to protect our air quality. New pollutants that gas companies produce, they need to have offsets or fund them. Also, there needs to be effective oversight. We cannot trust TCEQ. They have repeatedly lied to us. The Texas Railroad Commission, there needs to be oversight. And lastly, we need to have public hearings. A lot of us, thousands of us, are not satisfied with the decisions or the recommendations that have come up. There needs to be further input from the citizens to make sure that whatever rules or regulations on fracking are come up with are what is for the best of the community. Thank you for your time.
Patricia Angel.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council members. I am Patricia Angel. I'm affiliated with Dallas Move On, and we are in coalition with Dallas Residents at Risk. And not to sound like a broken record, I want to bring up some of the same issues that Gary just brought up about the need for extended buffer zones of 1,500 to 3,000 feet to help protect our children, our families, our citizens, and our workplaces. Water safety is a great issue in this particular scenario, and I'm going to tell you a short story in a moment. Obviously, we need to worry about clean air and help Dallas keep its clean air promises to its citizens. We need full disclosure of the toxic risks of the chemicals that are used, as well as local oversight. The story I want to tell you is about my nephew, who happens to be in his early 30s, is a Middle East veteran, who happens to work as a welder and repairs pipes. And I did not know what he was really doing until a couple of months ago, and I found out that he had spent 6 weeks in West Texas and that him and his crew were repairing pipes at fracking sites. And he told me a story where there were, he said, as far as the eye could see, there was nothing but pools of water that had been used for fracking. He had no idea what we were really talking about until we started discussing this issue. But he did find it peculiar that nothing grew in these water tanks that were the reservoir for the water that had been used in the fracking process. He said it was crystal clear. Nothing grew. He also told me that for 6 weeks, while these young men camped out in this West Texas area, they saw no living creature. They saw no birds. They saw no animals except for one stray rabbit, of which these young men killed, caught and killed by hand, and ate, not realizing the jeopardy that they were putting themselves in by this very simple process. The 6 weeks that they lived on that property and decided to camp out because it was cheaper and it was quicker and saved them time back and forth to the work site, they had no idea what they exposed themselves to. And I'd like for us to take this into consideration when we look at what we're exposing the citizens of Dallas and our neighborhoods to this. Thank you.
Byron Montgomery.
Thank you for the time. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Well, Tanel, my old high school mate. I'm a concerned citizen of Dallas, and sounds like we're all on the same tune. I want to talk about fracking and the lack of transparency. There are no public hearings on this matter, and we certainly do need to open up the process. Most working class Dallas people can't come to the city council meeting, so they would never hear a thing about it or be privy to any of the inside decisions that are going to take place here that could affect their lives. Right now, the Barnett Shale, the area under our feet and all around us, including Denton, and a city in Denton known as Dish, has added to the upset over existing pollution of water bodies and aquifers due to fracking. The Texas Railroad Commission has continued to support the fracking industry as clean. The Railroad Commission and the drilling industry has maintained that there are no cases of water pollution linked to hydraulic fracturing, but as we reported in December, and this was the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, the residents and local officials say there is evidence of water pollution from several sources, including leaks at well sites and problems with the disposal wells used to get rid of all the wastewater. So I went out and did some research. The federal government, a site called democrats.energycommerce.house.gov, reports that fracking water is with us forever. It cannot be cleaned. That the frack water has 10,000 times more contamination than the EPA allows in drinking water. And some of the fun ingredients are acids, which is like swimming pool cleaner, glutaraldehyde, a disinfectant like sterilizer for medical and dental equipment, sodium chloride, which is table salt, and dimethyl formamide, which is used in pharmaceuticals, acrylic fibers, plastics, and there are things like in laundry detergent, water treatment, soil conditioner, makeup remover, laxatives, things that are in cosmetics, and for washing powder, soap, water softener, glass, ceramics, antifreeze, household cleaners, de-icing, fluid, antiperspirant, and these are very harmful. Thank you.
Thomas Manal.
Good morning. My name is Thomas Menaw. I live at 9747 Amberley Drive in Dallas. And I'm speaking here this morning on behalf of a grassroots citizens group that is named Campaign for Election Funding Reform. I will make a few comments about something that should be quite obvious, and it is obvious to most of your constituents, and that is that corporations are not people and that money is not speech. However, no legislative body in the United States is now allowed to restrict the amount of money which is spent in election campaigns. That is a result of a ruling which came out from the U.S. Supreme Court, most notably the ruling in the case of Citizens United versus Federal Elections Commission. That ruling is that corporations have the same free speech rights as people, and that money is speech. People across the political spectrum are aghast at the effects that is having on elections at every level of government in the United States. Both a majority of Republicans and Democrats oppose the big money in political campaigns and the idea that corporations are people. However, a constitutional amendment will be required to reverse the Citizens United decision. Perhaps you've heard in the news about a billionaire businessman named Sheldon Adelson, who has written checks for $31 million to support 2012 elections. Money so far spent has gone almost entirely to super PACs for creating and broadcasting very negative TV ads. One other piece of news about Mr. Adelson is that he is under investigation for violation of the United States Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. He operates a very lucrative casino in the city of Macau in Asia. It is alleged that an official that has supervisory responsibilities over the casino has been bribed. If a business owner like Mr. Adelson were to decide that he would like to see legalized gambling in Texas, it would be possible for him to donate millions of dollars anonymously to political campaigns to elect local politicians who were in favor of legalized gambling. Donating that much money would not constitute bribery or extortion under existing law, but potentially corrupting influences on local politics would be the same. Would it be effective to spend millions of dollars in the final days of an election campaign to besmirch the reputation and record of a local politician? Well, that is actually happening all over the country. I hope members of the City Council become familiar with these issues and take appropriate steps. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your morning speakers.
Motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
None opposed. Motion carried.
Your next voting item is item 2, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning, you have 4 nominees to full council appointments. Lucy Billingsley, nominated by Councilmember Alonzo to the Cypress Waters Municipal Management District. Michael Kuttner, nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano to the Reinvestment Zone 8 Board Design District. And Phil Romano and Leonor Marquez, both nominated by Councilmember Alonzo to the Trinity River West Municipal Management District. Ms. Billingsley, Mr. Kuttner, and Mr. Romano all own property in the district, in their respective districts, and Ms. Marquez is an employee of a person who owns property in the Municipal Management District.
Okay. Do we have a motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried.
Your last item, item 3, is authorize the appointment of Rick Galceron to represent the City of Dallas as a member of a multi-jurisdictional committee as required by Senate Bill 1420 to determine the distribution of financial risk, method of financing, and tolling structure methodology for State Highway 183 from State Highway 161 to Interstate Highway 35 East.
Yes, I move approval for Rick Galceron to be our appointee to Senate Bill 1420.
Sandy, you want to speak? Second, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
In the poll? Motion carried.
Mr. Mayor, your briefings are next.
Who's doing the briefing? Mary, you doing the briefing?
No, Council, this is our annual bring you up to date as to where we are on the budget before we begin our final push to resolve and present a balanced budget to you the first week in August. As I know you're aware from reading it, our gap is down in the $25 million range, and this has been largely accomplished by looking at our revenues, which we see are trending the right way as regards sales tax, and fine-tuning our expenses. We still are going to do everything we can to fund the things that are highlighted, and that those are the things that constitute the $25 million. So this is just a kind of here's where we are on our path to getting a balanced budget in August, and appreciate any feedback you have this morning.
Okay, good morning. So again, we have a recap of the prior two budget briefings. I'll talk a little bit about where we've made progress and changes since the last briefing and where our current outlook is. A quick preview of some of the charges for services for next year's budget, and then we have our calendar and next step. So looking back to our February 1st briefing, at that point in time, a range was presented looking at a differential or a gap in the budget of anywhere between $49 million and $87 million. And then we came back in May with an update. We updated our revenue forecast as in the area of property tax, sales tax, and some of the other revenues as well, and brought the revenue forecast just up to about $1,011,000,000. And then at that point in time, we had received our initial bids for services from all of the departments, totaling about $1,063,000,000. Each of those bids were evaluated and prioritized by our key focus area teams with input from the city manager's office. So at that point in time, we had bids funded or above the line, equaling the revenue amount of the $1,011,000,000, and then we had identified or asterisked those services totaling about $43 million that were in the should-be funded category, and then a smaller amount of not funded services of about $5 million. So since the May briefing, we've made revenue adjustments of about $3.6 million, primarily in sales tax, and then some fine-tuning, as Ms. Sue mentioned, to our expenditures of about $14.5 million. So now brings our gap down to just under $25 million. So in a little more detail on the revenue adjustments, we've continued to see positive results for our sales tax this year, and so we've adjusted not only the current year estimate as well as next year's budget by about $2.9 million. And we do have some other minor adjustments of about $700,000. And then on the expenditure side, initially we had increased our fuel budget for next year as at the beginning of the year fuel prices really spiked up. We've seen that come down, fortunately, so we're able to reduce our fuel budget for next year. We have some better than budgeted prices on our right-of-way contracts. We are able to identify some other funding sources for some equipment replacement and police and fire. We've also looked at all of our salary budgets, what are we currently paying our employees, and adjusting our salary budgets to our current costs. We have some interlocal agreements that enable us to save money as well, such as the one with Dallas County Schools for the school crossing guards. We also looked at our reserve and insurance requirements for next year and are able to reduce our costs there. The contingency reserve in the current year has not been accessed, so we can roll forward those dollars to next year. We've also had success with our safety programs as well as our certified network and workers' compensation, so we're seeing reduced costs for workers' compensation for next year. Same along the way of liability and property insurance as well. We've made some other adjustments to costs for some contracts for the jail, the election, and other costs as well. So where we are now is we're able to fund bids of $1,015,000,000, and then reduce that should be funded category to the $24.6 million, and then the is not funded did come up by up to about $24 million. So on the next slide, you see a summary of each of the dollars allocated to the six key focus areas, and then at the very bottom are citywide costs for items such as IT charges, risk management, electricity and fuel that we will allocate once the budget is balanced. We'll allocate those to each of the individual services. So the next slide on page 12 is just a recap in writing of the earlier page. The ranking sheets are attached to the presentation, and any of the line items that were changed from the prior briefing, we've noted that with the pound sign, so it makes it a little easier to look at. So the rest of the briefing goes into a little more detail on what's funded or highlights of what's funded in each of the key focus areas. A lot of that is very similar to the last briefing, so I'll just try to point out what's changed there. On the cover of each key focus area, we have a summary that tells you the dollar amounts that have changed from the prior briefing. So again, the higher priority services and the should be funded category in the public safety has gone from about $24 million to $11 million. So again, some highlights on public safety. Many of your same services as we fund in the current year. And we did look how we are providing EMS response and if we will convert 8 of our peak demand ambulances to 5 full-time units, we can increase the number of hours of response time for EMS by 10,000 hours for next year. We have all of your usual police and fire type services listed as well. Then we move on to the should be funded highlights. We need to fund the officers that were hired in the current fiscal year, as well as anticipating attrition of about 200 police officers for next year as well. Replace ambulances as well as our school crossing guard contract with Dallas County Schools. So moving to the is not funded category, increasing the span of control in the fire department by eliminating one battalion. There's no change in the staffing levels at fire scenes. Able to purchase some of our equipment with other sources of funds and savings in the current fiscal year. So our second key focus area is economic vibrancy, and again, the summary update on the first page there, and you'll see services that are funded or above the line, such as street lighting and street maintenance. Again, we do have some reduction in the above the line for current service levels, but then intend to maintain current service levels for street repair, right-of-way maintenance in the should-be-funded category. Additionally, we want to continue our proactive replacement of the LED traffic light bulbs. There is a reduction in this key focus area as the proposed 2012 bond program does not include any city facility propositions, so we'll be reducing some of our staff in the city facility group in Public Works Department. Our third key focus area, clean, healthy environment. Just a minor change, adjusting for some staffing costs as well. Continue to have sanitation, environmental initiatives, animal services. We do have an addition of 5 sanitarians to do restaurant and bar inspections, making sure that we meet all the requirements for those inspections as well. In the should-be-funded category, want to add positions for the potential boarding house ordinance, as well as enhancing some maintenance at the animal shelter as well. Culture, arts, and recreation, key focus area. Again, we're able to maintain our hours at the recreation centers, as well as adding back the staffing for those rec centers that were closed during this current fiscal year or a portion of the fiscal year while they were under construction. Continue our aquatic services, the pools and Bahama Beach, at the same number of hours they were open in the current fiscal year. Maintain our parkland and our cultural centers. A portion of the parkland and cultural contracts are in the should be funded category, so we're working to make sure that all of those services are funded at same service level as the current year. There are some reductions in the capital improvement staffing in the park department as the 2012 bond program does not include a park proposition. Our educational enhancements key focus area includes our libraries, and again here we're working to maintain the same level of hours that were open in the current fiscal year, as well as adding $1 million to the funding for the materials budget, working on a multi-year plan to restore our funds for materials back to our peak year of 07-08. And then our final key focus area is the E3 government service, and we've had some reductions in the cost allocated to this key focus area because we were able to reduce our fuel costs, some of our insurance and reserve costs as well. This key focus area includes most of our administrative costs and citywide services that are allocated later in the budget process. And we do have a couple of minor enhancements for the City Secretary's Office and Civil Service related to processing uniform applicants, and then a few minor reductions related to one-time costs and workload. So to recap where we are, revenues compared to expenditures, we've been able to reduce the differential to about $24.6 million. So those are all the services that are asterisked on your ranking sheets. And so we will continue to analyze our revenues and expenditures and bring back a balanced budget on August the 13th. And so then I just wanted to briefly touch on the other charges for services and other budgets that you'll also see in August. So for our sanitation and stormwater services, we don't plan on any change in rates or any of the services that we'll be providing. So $20.25 per month on the residential garbage collection and landfill. Recycling pickup, our landfill will remain at $21.50 per ton, and storm drainage fees will remain the same as well. Dallas Water Utilities preliminary operating budget of $564 million and a capital budget of $275 million. We are looking at an overall projected retail rate increase of about 5.7%. This allows us to continue to invest in the utility as well as provide for the water conservation program so that we're able to continue to reduce our per capita water consumption, and then a preliminary outlook on the next two fiscal years as well. So our budget schedule follows, and on page 35, we've completed all of those dates, so I'll just move right on. The next key date that's coming up is the receipt of the certified tax roll, and we should have this no later than July the 25th, so once we get all our totals in, we will keep you posted as to how the tax base value is determined. And then the budget itself would be presented on August the 13th, and then we would have our usual schedule of town hall meetings, budget workshops, and public hearings, and then plan for a final adoption of the budget on September the 19th. So again, there is an appendix with all of the ranking sheets. They're updated, any of the lines that changed are marked with a pound sign, as well as the services that comprise the $24.6 million differential are also marked with an asterisk. So I will stop there, and we can take questions.
Mayor Sewell wanted to say something.
I just wanted to add to this. The only good news about this budget is that I think we may get it balanced without a lot more cutting. But there's not, as you can see, a lot of wiggle room for more things to be added. We've added a couple of things that we thought were just absolutely desperately had to do, i.e. striping streets. But this is kind of the first year we're beginning to see a little bit better revenue, so our hope is to end this without a lot of cutting that impacts services to our residents.
Linda Coop.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Good job, Tammy. It's really nicely done. Can we go back to page 16? I just want to ask one question. On this page, we talk about the officers after attrition not being, hopefully that we're going to, it should be funded.
Right.
It should be funded. So there's 200 officers that have not, that should be funded, that we're hoping to get funded. Is that it?
Right. For next year, we anticipate attrition of about 200 officers, so we want to fill those spots, keep the force about the same size.
Right. Can I have a chief is here or somebody from... I know he's coming. I want him back. Hey, Chief. can I ask you a question about the 200 officers that should be funded but are not in the budget right now?
Yes.
Those officers, last year we talked about the use of the force being so young, lots of young officers, new officers coming in. Do you feel like, is it your anticipation that we will hopefully hire 200 officers, and then do you have any issue with that same issue about the age of the officers?
I don't have that same issue, and I recommend it be a high priority to hire attrition, which is
okay.
It fluctuates between 160 and 200 each year. So
okay.
200 would be in the high of what attrition would anticipate being.
Okay. So I'm hopeful, Manager, when you bring it back in August, that we'll be able to do that, because it was a kind of a compact that we made with the citizens to keep our officers the same after attrition.
Yeah. The should-be funded are things that we anticipate. That's the $25 million that we're working toward. And when we start the budget process, what we're doing is prioritizing things. And if it were really, really, really bad and you had to keep things going, how would you prioritize things?
Right.
And that's kind of how that fell. But yes, we have every intention of getting that funded.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you too, Jane, for the briefing. Very good. Very thorough.
Thank you.
On page 8, I just real quick caught that you said police mark squad, not squad card, fire rescue personal protective equipment and life packs.
Mm-hmm.
You're reducing that by $2.7 million. Kind of explain that to me, because it sounds important.
We also make the purchase. We have some savings in the current fiscal year, so we can make that as a one-time purchase current year.
So we can
We're doing it. It's just we had it budgeted for next year, and we had some savings this year.
Okay.
We're going to use it and go ahead and do it now.
So we're still keeping our firemen safe.
Absolutely.
Of course. Okay. Okay. Then on page 16, I was one. These are the should be's.
Mm-hmm.
And down on the replacement of 14 ambulances, do you feel like we can replace them? And if we do, will that increase our ambulance force?
We're really looking at rescheduling and restructuring how we do that. And I was really excited because the fire department came up with a really good idea to take our peak demand and put them into basically full time. So we're going to increase the hours for coverage. So, the citizens will get more out of this, not necessarily by more money, but by a smarter way of managing it, and commend the fire department for working that out.
Great. Thank you. Then on page, let's see. Okay. On one stance you said we were, is not funded was the fire rescue battalion. And then on another page, I think you mentioned that you were going to fund it.
No, that one's not going to be tried to fund it. And we've worked with the fire department, and they believe that in these circumstances that we can do without that. It's not on the fire lines. It's a higher level of supervision that we're going to try to do without.
It is Paul Dyer, could I ask you a question, please? We're funding the parkland back to 81% of what we were doing. How does that affect you? And how will that affect the looks of our park?
Well, before he marches out and answers that, the rest of that funding is under should be funded.
That's what we're trying to get.
That's what we're doing during July. Anything under a should be funded highlights is we're trying to get funded. That's
okay.
The $24-25 million.
Okay.
So really,
We're funded up to 81%, but we're trying to get to the 100%.
Right. Today we're at 81%.
Okay.
I hope he doesn't have to figure out what we do.
Okay. So currently we're looking for $48 million.
$24 million.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Davis.
I'm going to start that. Paul, can you come back up, please? On here, Now, Mary, is this what Paul turned in to you? Let me make sure. On page 26, anything that deals with park and rec should be funded that is not funded?
Let me get to 26. Anything that's on a page that should be funded, we're working on getting it funded. I can't tell you it's funded now, but it's on our list to get done this next month.
Okay. Is this something that Paul turned in to you or you turned in to them?
Paul was a part of the development of this.
Okay. Let me ask this. The item that is not funded, highlighted, Paul, where it says park and recreation capital plan, what is that right there on the reduced by 14 positions?
That is a result of the bomb program having elements in it that are park and recreation elements, and so we have the needs over the next 3 years for a smaller capital division.
Okay.
And so we're looking for other jobs for those individuals. We'll be looking for jobs and downsizing that division by 14 positions.
We're doing the same thing in public works too, because this upcoming bond program doesn't have as much work,
mm-hmm.
so we don't need the people managing it and working on it. So we, when we have that reduction, we cut back the staff.
Okay, but what was that capital planning, design, and construction for? That's what I'm trying to find out.
That was for the implementation of the $342 million 2006 bond program that we're winding down on now, so we won't need those positions going forward for the next 3 years.
Okay, so this is, now, was there any new particular rec centers that was a part of this design? All of this is old from 06.
Everything that we had for recreation centers was from 06, and
mm-hmm.
we're finishing those up over the next year, and so these staff members will be participating in that until the end of the year, and then the remaining staff will pick it. There's still this is not the full staff in the capital design. We still have staffing there to finish the bond program and pick up miscellaneous projects over the next 3 years.
So those 14 positions, they will stay here until the end of the year or the end of next year?
End of this year. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Then I see here should be funded. On the should be funded, Mary, what, help me out with that again.
Well, for instance, we did not have the information on what the value of the tax base will be, so what our tax revenue will be off property.
Okay.
So I can't tell you for certain that, I have enough money to do all these things. So we're kind of, as we get to the end of July, we are balancing our knowledge about our revenues and our expenses, and so I'm to the point now that I can tell you I can do everything except this last $25 million, and it's all those things that it should be funded. That's what we're trying to find the money for during the next month, and we're hoping that, the property base comes in well, look at sales tax, look at our expenses, make sure that we're not doing anything we don't need to do. So we'll tighten it down the next month. I'm working on being sure that everything under should be funded gets funded.
Okay, back on page 26, Paul, you have the parkland maintenance of the mowing cycle, and you have 12 days. Are these all the parks that will be funded? Do you have a schedule of which parks are going to be mowed on which days with a full time a week?
Well, these will be adjustments to our mowing schedule should the budget not be able to fund these, but as the city manager said, it looks like these are going to be high priorities, and so at this point we're not expecting to see this much of a reduction.
Okay, do you have a list of the, because over at X-Line, for example, somebody needs to go over there and kind of make sure trash is picked up after Monday from Sunday. Mildred Dunn as well, trash from Sunday, because I have some pictures on my iPad, and I'll show you those pictures. And the trash needs to be picked up, so who will handle that?
We did have, on Monday we picked up all the parks, and so it takes sometimes till the end of the day to get around all the parks, and so you're going to see some of those on Monday not being picked up, as they go through their circuit.
This has been about a week now, so it's still not picked up.
Well, when you called last week, we went over and made sure it was picked up by the end of the day, but I'll check it.
I'm not talking about X-Line. I'm talking about you need to check Mildred Dunn and some of the other parks.
Okay.
To go check. I shouldn't have to say anything to you to go pick up trash on the park.
This is a new privatized contract, and we're adjusting. I think that we're going to get them on this. And so, if there's one that you see, but you're not picking up.
No, I'm not going to drive.
Okay.
Paul, you're telling me to drive. Go
no, ma'am,
no,
I'm not. I think we've got it under control. This contractor is understanding the program. They're moving quicker. We're even talking about even putting something in the budget to accelerate that because they're not getting around quickly enough, and so we need to see what the result. But we are adjusting to that. I promise you that.
Okay. So can you give me the timeline, date of when the trash is supposed to be picked up? Because I don't have a problem with it, Mary.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to make sure that trash is picked up in
sure.
a timely fashion, and that we don't have to have any of these problems.
We can give you the schedule times of every park in the system and when it's supposed to be picked up. And we have people going around checking that. If they don't pick it up in time, then we give them a bad score. And at some point, if they can't make that, then we reduce their reimbursement or their compensation as a result of that. And so they have an incentive to get out and get this trash picked up on a timely basis. And so
okay. Thank you, Paul. On page 25, on the city, who's telling the city culture? Oh, the 41 Recreation Centers, Paul, can you give me an update on that? It's in the ill-funded section.
Well, as you know, last year we took quite a few rec centers out of service for construction. All these centers are being completed. The construction is being completed. They will be coming back online, so all the centers will be operating at 55 hours this year. At the 35 large centers, and then we have 40 at the 6 small. The same schedule we've had for the last 3 or 4 years. We're going back to that schedule.
Okay, so all of them will be back up to 55 hours in the ill-funded column. And then on the 5 culture centers, what is that with the Majestic Theater?
What page are you on this, Davis? I'm sorry.
Page 25.
25?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hold on just a minute. It's just funded. I mean, we support those particular operations.
Is this all the 5 city culture centers you're talking about?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, throughout the city. Okay, so this would be the Latino, the South Dallas Culture Center,
yes, ma'am.
And all the
yeah.
other ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Page 19. Okay, on the Economic Development Initiative, Mary, does this include housing?
What particular page are you looking at? Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Page 16. Mary, on the security service for city facilities,
mm-hmm.
how many security officers do we have at the Martin Luther King Center?
We'll get that detail for you.
Okay.
What we've got on our list is to maintain our level of security that we've got right now.
Okay.
So that's what we're working toward.
Okay. When will we, do you see us increasing any security system? Because at the Martin Luther King Center, people's cars have been broken into in the back of the parking lot.
We're watching that. We're going to try to do better on that. Yes, sir, ma'am.
Okay.
We are. We know that we've identified that issue. You notice some of the security things we've done around here. We're trying to use technology a little more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we won't be adding a lot. We're trying to do it better in a different way. So, but we're on that problem.
Okay. Thank you. On page 17. On the Southern Dallas Highway Coverage Agreement, which is not funded, what is that mean?
Do you remember several years ago the Sheriff's Department said that they would take care of the enforcement on the highways for us and free up our officers to be in the neighborhoods?
Mm-hmm.
Some new folks arrived on the Commissioner's Court and they got some tight budgets and they didn't want to do that anymore.
Okay.
We believe it's worthwhile for lots of good reasons. One, it frees up our officers, but two, it deals with air quality too, because the faster you get wrecks and problems off the freeways, there's no backup and no cars sitting there spewing out bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't gotten this resolved about how to do it. We're talking to the county, trying to emphasize to them the benefits to the people that live in the county and to the people that live in the city. So we're still working this one through.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Ms. Grayson,
is there anything here that you can give me as an example of what was below the line at our May briefing that is now above the line? Now, I mean, I look at, like, I know where the pound signs are. Does that move that item above the line? I mean, for instance, I'm looking at golf and tennis centers that has a pound sign by it.
That means it has some changes in it. It doesn't necessarily mean
it doesn't necessarily mean it's moved up above
right,
the line.
Right, but we can show you where the old
the old and the new lines are both delineated on the ranking sheet.
Matrix, yeah.
So you should be able to see, like in public safety, the line between 516 was between lines 42 and 43, and we've been able to move that line down to between 47 and 48. So we've annotated where we were previously and where we are now.
Well, I know you expect me to talk about this, and I'm going to, because park maintenance is still below the line. And what makes me nervous about the effort to go ahead and try and fund that is that come August 15th, if that thing is still below the line and I want it above the line, then I'm going to be advised that I need to find $3 million.
Ms. Grayson, I am not going to be doing that, okay?
Promise, swear.
Promise.
I mean,
that ain't happening.
And I tell you, Carolyn, well, I mean, I know it ain't happening because I'm not going to be able to find $3 million.
No, I'm just saying you will not have to worry about that. Okay.
Because I was going to say, Carolyn, I want you to point out that one of the things below the line is current level of evening and weekend litter removal. That is below the line. So, I mean, if you're concerned about that, then, you know, we need to work hard to get that above the line, because I do not want our parks and trails to look shabby. And that is what's going to happen if we keep cutting back on the maintenance of this parkland and the litter pickup. So, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. This needs to be above the line. And please, Mary, I do not want to come here on August 15th and see that below the line.
Again, everything that's listed under should be funded, I understand, is of critical importance. Most of those things are of critical importance to you. Many of them are of critical importance to the overall operation. I understand the assignment is to get that funded and worked out for us.
Okay.
The idea of this presentation is so when y'all come back in August, you aren't surprised. And I'm telling you right now, I don't want to surprise you with that. I know better than that.
No nasty surprises.
No nasty surprises. Absolutely not.
Thank you.
Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Steele, you get better and better. When you started, you were shy, but everyone is. Dave Cook was shy when he started. And went out gangbusters. You are getting better and better. My compliments.
Thank you.
Slide 17. One of my questions on slide 17 has been answered, but I want to go back to it. I have a question on two bullets there. Ms. Tim, you talked a little bit about the agreement about getting those accidents cleared.
Mm-hmm.
Now, help me again. How are those accidents getting cleared right now?
They do some of it, and we do some of it. So.
Are they leaning towards us on they're doing more?
Oh, I would like for you to whisper in somebody's ear and tell them to lean a little further toward us. But
we can work with that. We can do some whispering.
Yeah.
All right. On the bullet right after that, who is cleaning up around Red Hubbard right now?
I believe we're. All right, Lacey, answering that. These are our edges and our interlocal agreement around our edges. So.
The city of Garland currently responds as the first responder to some of those parks that are technically in the city of Dallas but are quite far away. They offer that first response, then we get there and take the call over. They've been concerned about that because there's been more and more, the city of Garland has, about that arrangement, and so we're trying to modify it to be one that has us participating in a different way with them.
Participating in a different way. Does that mean we're paying more money?
Right now, we're not paying any money to them for that work that they're doing.
Usually, when we get in these situations with interlocal agreements with other governmental bodies, they have some needs and we have some needs. So the real key is to determine where we can match those up and trade off work or trade off. You know, some things are valuable to them that aren't to us, and so that's where we are in the process with this, really.
Thank you.
Haven't got it nailed down and signed on the dotted line. So
I'm sure Mayor Jones is listening. Mayor Jones understands that we don't want to pay him any more money, and we'll help him as he helps us. Thank you so much, Mr. Jones.
Ammo going.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to point out to anyone who's listening who is concerned about the fact that some of the library funding is still below the line, that it is all of our intention, and I know the city managers, to fund libraries as they're funded this year and to have all libraries at a minimum of 40 hours a week. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for that great presentation. It's encouraging to see that at least the economy in Dallas appears to be turning around and how healthy and well-positioned we are. I have a few questions on page 17. On the rescue battalion chief, if that's not funded, do you think that will stress our resources too much, spread it out?
No, it wouldn't be there if we did.
Okay.
And we talked with not only the management staff, but the associations, and we're all in agreement we can live without that this year.
So you reached out to everyone. Everyone's in agreement that...
I don't know that everyone is, but we've reached out largely to... I mean, I can't tell you everybody's a happy camper, but we talked to management and to the associations, and they understand the logic here.
All right. And then another issue with, just while we're on the topic of fire, the promotional exams, are we funding those right now? Or?
We are asking extra staff for civil service so they can do that work. Now, when and how we get that done next year, that will be scheduled later.
Okay. So we are looking at this next year, putting a mechanism in place for handling that. Great. Thank you. And next question is on slide 25. I'm with my colleagues about getting the park funding up, getting this 81% to 100%. Just wanted to make that comment. I know we've already...
Yep.
Discuss that. Just wanted to share that. And just a general question on the arts funding. What would you say the split for the arts funding is going to be for our arts district, kind of our downtown, versus getting the money out to the smaller programs that we have?
Normally, that is handled through the Cultural Affairs Commission. I can give you where it was last year. Well, they'll have the same amount of money available, except the difference is that we will be meeting our obligations to the AT&T PAC contract.
All right. And then meeting the obligation, does that increase us about, was it $1 million this year? Will we go up to?
I can add $1 million or 800. What was it?
It goes up 800.
800, yes.
800,000. Yeah. All right.
Now, this is a contract we signed, one of these public-private contracts, and it's critical that we honor it, because no one's going to sign them with us again if we keep on not honoring it.
And certainly it's important to fund the arts. That's why I was just also, making sure that we've got the money for the smaller venues that may not be downtown.
They're not cuts in the arts in the budget, in the amount. When there's a process that these organizations go to the Cultural Affairs Commission, present their programs, present their options and what they need going forward, the Cultural Affairs Commission makes a recommendation on how that is distributed.
So that if the funding level staying the same, then by increasing the funding to the AT&T Performing Arts Center by $800,000, will...
That's in addition to the budget.
That's in addition to the budget. So it's actually going up from last year.
Yes.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you, Mary. The next question will be on page 34. Just wanted to talk about water, one of my favorite subjects. For the residential rate increase, I see this next year we're looking at 6.7% increase.
No, so it's 5. Oh, the following year, yeah.
The following year.
But understand, we like to give you an idea, but Mr. Atkins, Mayor Atkins and I have had this discussion several times. Years out predictions are pretty broad, so that'll be fine-tuned as we go. And as you can see from when we talked to you earlier about this next year's coming year's rate, we've fine-tuned that from 7.3 to 5.7. So I'm just telling you it's in that range, but we work on those individually. I mean, you may have an emergency come up and it has to be more, but also we may be able to fine-tune it and have relationships or impact that change it to less. That's today's guess.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And my question was actually it's directed towards, although you put the forecast to the retail rate increases, I was wondering about the commercial rate increases and the wholesale rate increases.
Well, we can get that.
If I may finish. Sure. And I was wondering if I could have that information just to see that we're not putting all the burden on the water increase on our residents, since everyone uses water, the cost of our water infrastructure is increasing, just to see that cost shared by everyone that we supply water to, whether it be wholesale, commercial, and residential, since it appears residential is doing their fair share. I was just wondering about those others. So if you could perhaps get that information.
We'll do that for you.
To me, I'd appreciate that. Thank you. Now just some more just general questions. What do you expect for the next fiscal year in terms of the number of RIFs?
Don't know yet.
Don't know yet. Do we have a range, an upper limit, lower limit yet?
No.
No range? But is it on the table?
Yes.
Okay.
Because there will be some for sure, because it doesn't make sense to keep those capital planning staff when you're not doing any construction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we have a good chance of finding them employment other places in the city, but risks do not necessarily mean that people get impacted, because sometimes we have vacancies we're able to fill. So, but yes, there will be some risks because that capital staff, it just doesn't make sense to keep it.
And knowing that this is still uncertain and not fully developed, I've got two questions about the risks. When do you see this, one, starting to crystallize? And two, a follow-up to your last statement, which areas do you see there being rifts in generally, and then where do you see what departments the increases going to?
The increases of what?
Well, you said we may have some rifts in some departments. You said construction, just a full list of those, and you said there may be opportunities to hire them.
That's not an increase.
Departments.
That won't be an increase. That's a vacancy. In
the vacancies, and where do you see most of our...
I don't know yet. Just can't tell you.
Broad areas, yeah.
As I told you, it would be the capital staff. That's the one I know for sure will be reducing. But we've known that for a while, so people have found other jobs or moved on or whatever they're going to do about it. We will have a RIF process when the budget is presented to you in August. We will give formal announcements to people at that point in time. But most of the people that have been talked with already know that there's a possibility.
So then, right now, which areas are the ones that have the most vacancies? What department?
I can't tell you off the top of my head. I'd have to get that for you.
Okay.
It's a snapshot. It varies every day.
A snapshot, just a general.
Sure.
If I could have just a snapshot of where we are.
Some of these people would
appreciate it.
Some of the people would probably end up
in
water.
My next question would be on... do you think building inspection, because that's a department where we're making great gains and we're doing a good job, and I brought this up at our last budget workshop, number 3, do you see them continuing to get the funding, or I know it's something that you can always put more money into, but we do have the funding secured there to meet our goals for this next fiscal year?
Yeah. And you remember that's not necessarily general fund, and we're having a lot of building permits, so that's enabled us to look forward and see we'll be able to do some of the improvements we need to do. We can get you some detail on that we've got proposed. We've got additional staff and additional technology on the horizon for that.
Great. And so my next question would be on code, and specifically on the group homes. Where is that currently? If we do pass this ordinance, we're going to be briefed on it later today. We're going to take a vote on it on Wednesday, June 27th. Right now, do you see that
funded? It's budgeted.
Wonderful.
Right now.
Well, greatly appreciate that. So we've got the funding will be there. I know it's something we've been working on the housing department and with Carolyn Davis's leadership. Well, thank you for the wonderful presentation. That's all my questions, Mayor.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On page 17, and this, I think we've all kind of looked at this, but my only question on that is when you talk about the battalion, one fire rescue battalion, how many people is that, Mary?
I see. How many people is the fire battalion? One rescue battalion? One fire rescue battalion? Right.
Four FTEs. Uh-huh. And you said they were higher level of supervision. So those four FTEs would be who, AC? What titles? The on page 17, the fire rescue battalion that is not funded. My question was, how many FTEs is that? And Mary's answer was it was the higher level of supervision. What, and if it's four FTEs, what sort of titles would those be?
They're a battalion chief, obviously, but also drivers for three shifts.
Drivers for three shifts.
Yes.
Drivers for the battalion chief.
To drive the battalion chief.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I think that was a question I really needed an answer to. Page 23. I know this is under the should be funded, and we're going to work very hard to fund this. I just want to say that I'm very thankful we've got community prosecutors in the should be funded highlight. They've done an exceptional job in District 1, and we couldn't do the things that we're trying to get cleaned up in that area without them. So thank you, Mary, for that. On page 16, school crossing guards. This is a little worrisome because, you know, we're definitely going to drive this over to the Dallas County Schools. However, we still have responsibility for them in June, July, and August, and school starts the end of August. And so we've got some issues with some schools not being covered on school crossing guards now at the school year end. So I want to be sure that we don't just drop it and we're passing the buck to county schools and then county schools is passing the buck back to us. We've got to be proactive in making sure that the schools are covered with crossing guards come the first day of school in August. So that's very worrisome to me. I have some schools in my district that don't have a crossing guard because of whatever reason, but I want to make sure that we understand that if that's still in our basket, we need to be sure that we are proactive in covering school crossing guards for the schools in our area. And again, you know, yes, we know Dallas County Schools will be taking it over, but in the meantime, we've got to be sure that we're prepared for the beginning of school to make sure that those schools have crossed, especially the elementary schools.
There's been a lot of communication with the school district in that transition. As I think it's already been like 5-6 weeks that they have been meeting with our employees to explain to them the transition. They are also planning that transition to take place in just a couple of weeks, in July 1st, actually.
Okay.
And there's been a lot of effort made to make sure that all the various positions that we had in terms of placement, et cetera, are going to be filled with basically the same people. It's just the overall who's paying their check.
Right. And again, I think where we have vacancies, and I have a real critical issue at Peabody Elementary School, that we need to be sure that we don't drop the ball and that we're not covered where we were not covered in June,
right,
when the school ended. So I'd love to work with you on that.
Sure.
All right. Page 26. Again, it's worrisome to me to lose 14 positions in planning, design, and construction. We're losing experience. We're losing people who know our areas. They know our districts. You know, I guess I'm just a little concerned that we can't use these 14 positions to work on the bond program. Is that not?
Well, you don't have parks material in the bond program.
Oh, that's correct.
And here's what usually happens is the bond programs, you know, when we have a large bond program, we hire up to have people to manage them. The best thing to happen, but doesn't work this way, would be to have a regular kind of medium-sized bond program all the time to keep people on staff. But in a practical sense, you can't do that. And so, but what does happen is they usually stay with the city, and we get them back involved in that as the bond program ramps up again. But
okay.
You won't have... Public Works has got the same issues as Parks does. There will be less to work on. I mean, $600 million as opposed to $1.35. So, but we're not trying to kick people out the door. We're trying to find something else for them to work on. If they need to move on or want to move on, they can. But it's just, it's responsive to what the workload is.
Okay. Well, again, I just don't, it's worrisome to me that we're going to lose experience and that we need to figure out how to keep as many as we can. So I like your answer. That's fine. Page 34, on the water conservation program, most of you know that we had a great program in how we recycle grease, and so I'm very happy to see that continuing the water conservation program is in the budget as a is funded. So thank you very much.
Mr. Caraway.
Oh.
Thank you, Mayor Atkins. I've been waiting to say that for a long time, but you know that. Is Mr. Dyer still in the room, and then while he's coming? Mary, let me just ask you a couple things. We have so many city employees, and they're just fantastic, got degrees, no engineering, and all those things. Is it possible that we could use more in-housing versus going out for bid with consulting with some of our own staff? I'm just asking.
If we did that, we would be laying more people off than we're laying off now. One of the reasons, you know, the contracts have lots of good advantages to them, and one of them is that, you know, we don't staff up hugely and then back down. We keep a planning and management staff for our capital projects. Then we provide work to companies in the community by hiring them to do the work. So us having all that expertise on hand all the time would not be the most efficient way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Our employees are good, but that cycle goes up and down. And
the only reason I mentioned because then when the contractors and engineers go out, they bring the plans back to us for approval, and I'm just saying, well, if we're capable of approving, you know, their work, then we should be able to do that work and save.
Well, we could. Well, it doesn't save any dollars, really. We've looked at it before, and so it doesn't say it's best to bid those projects out, get that money out in the community, but it's also saves money for the taxpayer too. We certainly are capable.
Okay. I'm just asking.
I agree with you.
Look under every rock.
We're very capable.
Where, but sometimes, are there any opportunities at times where some of us can do in-house?
Yeah,
that we could save versus sending it out.
Well, it doesn't always save, and we want to do it the best way. But when we look and see that this is something that we do that we're best at, we don't privatize it.
Okay. All right. I can go with that. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about the group homes this afternoon. I wanted to ask about a couple of rec centers. Where is Mr. Dyer?
Paul?
I wanted to see what's going on with one, Beckley Steiner, and you can get an update as related to that budgetary-wise, and also Ms. Hill, I was just because it's under construction, I was going to ask also about Cummins. Those two are kind of fenced off now, have been. What is the status of those two rec centers?
Both are under construction. I don't have the exact completion status. I can get that for you, but they're both under construction, and we're anticipating the completion of construction in the next 5 to 6 months.
At Beckley Steiner, does it have the spray ground in it?
That project does not. That is the reconstruction, renovation of the rec center and the building and the areas, but does not include the new spray ground. That will be coming up in the near future.
Now, what is the near future? Wasn't it in a past bond program?
It was. We still have projects that we're putting out this year for the 2006 bond program based on the schedule.
Now, what year was the spray ground? Which bond program? Was Carolyn?
2000.
When Carolyn Brandon was still on the bond, on the park board when that happened.
It was 2006.
She's dead now. She's passed. of 2006?
Yes, sir. And it was
for the spray ground?
Yes, sir.
And that is that's the irony of the bond program, is that we passed in the 2006 bond program for the spray ground at Beckley Center, and this is 2012, and it is still not online, and we did this back in 2006.
Right.
The voters approved it in 2006, and that's very significant as we have these bond programs and these meetings. I have one tomorrow night, Steve Chris, at 6 o'clock, the bond program at Steve Chris Golf Course. I want everybody to know that, and the public is welcome to attend. But my problem is that we passed in 2006 in the bond program, 2006, and now on top of that, we still do not have the spray ground from 2006, and we're now talking about a big aquatic program, and the voters passed this, and the neighborhood is still without it. I'm not going to let it go because, you know, it's 2006. I'm not trying to beat nobody up. I'm letting you know the fact. In 2006, we passed and voted on a spray ground that has not taken place, that is not a part of this current renovation that is going on now, in which means, again, whenever it should come, if it should come, then we got to interrupt the activity at the rec center again, maybe in 2015, should we have it by then, to then come back and redo what we should have been doing years ago. Now, whose fault it is, I don't know, and that's why I said this bond program, I want the bonds to be sold for the small projects first. I know we have, and I said this at my bond meeting, I know we're going to do State and Thomas. I support that. I've encouraged the folks for that. But I want bonds sold for streets and economic development put first, because it's taken us too long to get there. And by the time we wait 10 more years to get something done and get something sold, everybody's car being filled in up and down in the trench if we don't do the streets. I mean, just, you know, I got a few other things I want to say, but I'm a little bit warm about Beckley Center in the 2006. I think you all should find a way while it's under construction before we open it to figure in this playground, I mean this spray ground, whatever it is. You need to find a way. I don't want to keep my constituents inconvenienced. The traffic, the not being able to go to the park and have the picnics and play the softball, the recreation center is closed down. If we're going to fix it, fix it. And then when we open it, let's go on to the next problem. The Coliseum, I was at the rodeo this weekend, and ever since I've been on the park board back in the 90s, we have the Coliseum and the roof. I don't know why we can't get some paint and paint the roof. It's inside the State Fair Coliseum. First of all, this weekend at the Juneteenth Rodeo, it was extremely hot inside the building. People were in there fanning, and there's no reason for folks to have to be fanning. Do the air conditioners work at the Fair Park Coliseum? Yes, they do, because during the fair, you can go by there yourself, and you can walk past the door with the door open, and you have to walk past the door with a coat on, because it's so much cold air. It makes no sense for us to be trying to market Fair Park and us to ask the voters and the people of Dallas to come and support us at Fair Park if we're not going to take care of it. Now, I don't know why we can't get the roof painted at Fair Park in the Coliseum. It is the ugliest roof in the United States of America. And all we need to do is take care, as we take care of everything else, Mr. Mayor, the facilities that belong to us. And that is why people will not and do not want to rent our facilities. And this is why in the park department that we have low income because folks do not want to come and utilize our facilities because we undermarket them. Now, I'm not trying to beat you up, Paul, but I'm going to put this on blast about the roof. I've asked for it since the 90s. I asked you all to just do what you did in the automobile building when we had the fair. They took some wire, just wire. You can get the wire from Lowe's or Home Depot. You stretch the wire from one end across to the other end. You go to Cloth World and you get some cloth, just cloth, and you string the cloth across, and you string it across, and you string it across, same as we did in the automobile building during the fair. It doesn't cost, Mr. Mayor, $10,000 to do this. And then you can hide the roof, the ugly roof. I'm going off about it because I guess people think I'm playing. And yet when I say stuff, folks say, well, he's just venting, he's just going off, that old Dwayne. It is a simple way for us to take what we have and take advantage of what we have and economically put some type of appearance on it so folks will say, well, hey, look, I want to have my wedding reception there. Yeah, well, that's not this is the park department. And when you look back, Ms. Davis, at the parks when we were kids growing up, I want to know something else. I want to know how many people in Dallas, Texas, and do some type of survey, go on picnics in our parks. And if and then let's see why they don't go. You know, why is it that they don't take kids and go and use a barbecue grill, spread the blanket, play with the kids, feed the ducks, lay out, and have picnics? It has to be a reason. We put so much into parks. But our parks are underused. They're beautiful when we pass by. But who's using the parks? Now, I'm going to get in your dish just a little bit, Ms. Davis, because, and I have asked you as well, because this is the park at Forest Park that Ms. Davis has been working on, so it's like it's a free fall. The people go there, and there's no kids at the park. If you go over there, it's 10:35 now, if you go over there, within the next 25 minutes, they're drinking on the park, they're gambling on the park, they're shooting dice, I know that, I walked up on them, they're throwing them dice like 40 going north, and got all of the stuff out there, and they have taken over the park, and the park is not clean, and the irony of it, and the reason I'm saying this, is because, one, because the people, chief, gather in that area, it's very, very dangerous. And it's not park-related, it's not safety-related. The young man that works at the little store there, he got shot the other night there. Not on the park, but across the street from the park, from the people that hang at the park. And you know, I asked for the fence around it, I asked for us to... Since, you know, I've been an advocate for park police because, you know, I understand that the Dallas police has their responsibility because we're doing DISD's job too. I understand who's got a guard job. We got our hands full. I understand that. But at the same token, the reason people don't go on these picnics is because they do not feel safe in the park. And I expect the park department, the park board, to you all operate autonomously. And I expect for you all to come and get a grip on all these things we're talking about. I'm not beating you up, Paul. Don't get me wrong, but I'm going to vent all of this today because I want it truly addressed and dealt with and not just my voice being heard. I want results. I want to see the clean parks. I want to see people off the parks. I want to see no drinking in the parks. I want to see the pride in the parks. I want to see the things that we see that a park is supposed to provide that we're not having. And I want to say a greater folks. Mr. Mayor, I really appreciate you letting me visit these things. Now, I'm almost through. Now, who's in charge of the Cedar Crest Bridge? The park department. Okay. If we go across the park department, and this is totally true, George, so I want you all to hear this, and Jill. The Cedar Crest Bridge, and I invite the press to go by there and follow up on this stuff so you can get a action shot of what I'm talking about.
You go across the Cedar Creek Bridge in the next 30 minutes. On the bridge, it's the dirtiest bridge in Dallas, Texas. It's the most underkept bridge in Dallas, Texas. You can go across the Houston Valley Bridge, the Conlin Bridge, the Sylvan Bridge, Westmoreland, Hampton, and we're never going to have another beautiful bridge as Margaret Hunt Hill. But here's the deal. There's simply no trash, no nothing on any of those bridges. If you go across there now, it's all types of debris, foliage and stuff falling from the trees. The trees are not cut back on the Cedar Crest Bridge at all, okay? And, you know, you won't cut them back. Just cut them off the bridge so that the stuff won't fall on Cedar Crest, Martin Luther King Bridge.
It's not parked.
Well, it is parked. Some of it is, so y'all supposed to cut the trees.
All right, somebody told me this story.
It's the
Cedar Crest Bridge. Whoever. Because y'all tell me the park department has come with the bucket to cut the tree. So here's the deal. Whoever fault it is, yeah, get it fixed today. How about that? I don't know what department. Y'all get it today. And why are you doing it? When you pass right by the transit, and Jill, this is why we're putting all this on the transit. When you look on that bridge and go by the transit, the bridge has nothing but spider webs. You know how you have, like, you walk into a haunted house? It's spider web. We won't even clean the spider web off the bridge. It's not just one spider web. It's about 10,000 of them from one point to the other. And my constituents have to drive home to go that way. And we're talking about the transit, and I'm trying to do everything to make the transit right. But I'm having these problems. All right, well, I'm going to leave Reunion Arena alone, Mary. But I'm still waiting on the Dallas Convention Center, the Dallas Convention Center arena in which we're supposed to renovate, in which I was happily to go along with the tearing down of the Reunion Arena because we were going to put money into the Dallas Convention Center arena to retrofit it to compete with facilities such as Nokia in Grand Prairie. Nokia, everybody goes to Nokia to Grand Prairie, to the concerts. So that means everybody is leaving Dallas to go to Grand Prairie to the concerts. We're supposed to retrofit the Dallas Convention Center arena so that we could compete with Nokia so we could keep the revenue in Dallas. Okay, so there
it is on the list. But it is very, very expensive because it's got to be retrofitted for all sorts of ADA stuff it doesn't currently have.
Okay.
And what we're working on right now as far as the capital side of the convention center is being sure that the parts we are using now for the conventioneers are taken care of. It is on the list, but it'll be a big sucker when it comes along. So.
Okay.
But it's there. Everybody's focused on it.
I saw that.
It's going to be a while to get before we get it done.
Okay. That's good. Mr. Mayor, Mr. Paul, all of it wasn't your fault. But the part that was, I know we're going to correct it. And that I misspoke on, whoever responsibility it is, then y'all get it fixed. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Ms. Allen, please.
Oh, just real quick, you know, we're in a whole lot better shape now than we were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and a year ago. So it's going to be a lot easier budget as we go through, as we do this. We'll look forward to seeing what the tax rolls have to say. Come July, then in August we'll be able to start to finalize this thing. It's always the same thing over and over again, though. It's always arts, librarians, and parks is what it'll boil down to on the conversation, and hopefully we can, at the end of the day, expand that conversation one of these days to other issues other than arts, libraries, and parks. I'll keep my eyes real close on the community prosecutors. That's the lifeblood of at least my district, is my community prosecutors. One last, and just a question, is EMS, is it a break-even? Are we at a break-even on EMS?
No, sir, I don't imagine we are. You're not at a break-even on lots of services the city does.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Mr. Davis, round two.
Yes.
Oh, hold on. Excuse me.
Alonzo, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, very much. And thank you very much, Ms. Jean, for your presentation. It's a whole lot different than the last time we had, so that's good, and we learned a lot. And a lot of the questions were answered on some of the questions that some of the colleagues asked, so I look forward to hearing the answers to the questions that were asked. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilwoman Davis, please.
Thank you. Paul, can you come back up, please? And this question is to Mayor and Paul. I have to say this because my colleague's been talking about this particular roof since 2007. And Paul, if we were to put the roof into the budget to get it fixed, if we were to put the cost of the money into the roof, how would you support it?
Davis, I don't have money right
you
now.
This is what I'm talking about. Ms. Carraway is put Paul on blast. And to talk about this roof, and we've been dealing with this roof since 07. Now, I told Ms. Carraway that some of this is Ms. Stone's responsibility, too, because it comes into the budget. Now, Paul, how much does it cost to get the roof taken care of?
Well, we took a tour of Ms. Carraway a few years ago, and we spent about $85,000 fixing the structure.
Okay.
It still needs to be. It's not a pretty roof. The architecture is not very well designed. We need to spend a significant amount of money, several hundred thousand dollars, to do it right. The pipe and drape system is something that we could do that Mr. Carraway is referring to, and that's I think the estimate on that was about $60,000-$70,000 to put the pipe and drape system in for that large area. We can do that, but it's also an expendable commodity.
This is what I need to have done, because I'm tired of this roof conversation keep coming up in my district. I want you guys to get together and meet on how. Now, I'm just only going by what Ms. Carraway saying. I didn't bring it up. Did I bring it up? No, I didn't bring it up. I want to get the roofing taken care of at some point. Now, I'm just saying, Ms. Carraway saying that it's Paul's fault. Yeah. But what I'm saying, Paul, if he gives the amount to you, would you get it fixed based on what Mr. Carraway is talking about?
And what I'm telling you is...
No, you didn't tell Mr. Carraway.
Both of you, Mr. Dyer has plenty of choices to make how he spends his money. I don't tell him that.
Okay, then if that is the case, Mr. Dyer, then why would you not get this roof taken care of if it's a huge problem? And I've gone in there, and it is ugly. It's not the prettiest thing in the world. When other areas of South Park has been taken care of, so what do we need to do to take care of this problem?
As Ms. Soon says,
y'all going to take a pin on me. Mr. Dyer. So what do we need?
We
to
have
do?
Budget, but it's a choice between fixing broken pipes or making something more beautiful. Does the water function? We don't have enough money to fix it all.
Okay.
And we do have discretionary budgets, but it boils down to we've got to fix what needs to be maintained in order to function.
So why is the Coliseum not a major priority?
Because it doesn't fall under the category of an urgent need like pipes and air conditioning and things like that.
Have you told Mr. Carraway this?
We actually, Mr. Carraway and I walked the property a couple of years ago, and we at the time we had a little bond money left over, and we spent about $85,000 fixing the structure in that ceiling, and it looks a lot better than it did. It's not beautiful, it's not draped and with beautiful draperies and things, but that has to be replaced every year or two because it gets dirty and old. You take it down and clean it, put it up for these special events.
Okay, we need to decide how we're going to take care of this facility. Okay? I'm not asking you to have all the information for me today by August, but I want to come up, I want you to come up with a plan on how we're going to fix this facility. Because every year at budget time, the same problem continues to be a conversation. Okay?
Okay.
And if that is the only conversation, then we need to fix it. That's the only conversation.
Okay.
Now, Mary, if this is the only conversation at Fair Park, then I would like for you to work with Mr. Dyer to see if we can find some way of fixing this problem.
Okay.
The other thing I want to ask, in this budget that we're being briefed on, Mary, do we make any final decision? Do we get back with you or anything we'd like to see above the line?
Certainly. I'll present a budget to you in August, and then y'all can make any changes you need to make.
What budget is this? Is this the budget for August?
It's a budget. We're working toward August,
okay.
But as I said, the things that are under should be funded. We don't know that we have the money for it.
Do we make the final decision on the budget?
Of course.
Okay. That's what I needed to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. So if anything that we have or that we would like to see above the line, we can bring it back to you before August.
You certainly can. I thought I had your priorities identified, and I still got a $25 million gap, so anything you bring to me adds to that gap.
Okay, so for example, Mary, don't get frustrated.
I'm not.
So, for example, if we have any issues that deals with weekend cleaning of the parks, we can bring that back to you before August.
Yes, but what I said is I've got a $25 million gap.
I understand.
Additional adds to it make the gap bigger. I don't know that I can get there. When the budget is presented to you in August, y'all look at it and say, okay, I would rather spend this money cleaning the parks on the weekend than I would spend it over here. So you balance it out. But I'll be glad to know what our priorities are, and we'll see what we can do. But I've still got a $25 million gap.
Okay. The last time we talked about this budget, you gave us a ranking sheet, did you not? Did you give us a ranking sheet of what we need, or was it? What did you give us a ranking? Have you given us anything, a ranking sheet, so we can look at what we think are priorities for this budget?
Yes, ma'am. It's attached to your briefing.
The ranking sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the purpose of the ranking sheet?
It shows what's been funded and what's not funded and what the priorities are.
What's the purpose? What do we give back to you if we want to say, Mary, we like to see A, B, and C?
Like you do anything. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm fine with taking input. I'm just trying to emphasize that I've still got a big hole. And if you want to give me suggestions, it helps to say, I'd rather you not do this and spend that money on this.
Understand.
Because there's still a $25 million hole.
So even though you're giving us this budget, now that's what I'm trying to find out. This budget workshop is for input back to you,
yes,
or is it a workshop that you say, okay, bless this and let's move forward?
No, it's for both.
Okay.
I want your input, and I want you to say, okay, you know, it's not perfect, but we're where we need to be for right now. And
okay.
That's what I hear you saying, and you want something looked at.
And that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
And I'm just saying, you know, and the only concern I have is the part. That's the only thing that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Is making sure, and I guess this goes to Paul more so than you, but because you're working on the budget, is that making sure that the parks are able to be maintained and clean. It is still not funded, but you're looking, hopefully by August, you'll have some ways to fund some of the maintenance for the parks.
The items that are under should be funded. That's what we're working to fund by August.
And if we have some concerns, we can give you that information before
certain.
August.
Certain.
Okay. So our colleagues, we can do it together if we want to,
mm-hmm.
or individually.
Certainly.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Ms. Gray.
Thank you, ma'am. I just want to make, Mary, I want to make an observation on something you said. While it is important to maintain the parks that conventioners go to and look at, it is equally important to maintain the neighborhood parks that people...
I'm only talking about parks. In that answer, I was talking about the convention center building itself.
I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about parks.
You did
say parks.
Well, if I did, I was mistaken.
Yeah.
Mr. Carroway was talking about the Coliseum, which is part of the convention center, and the convention center has been gotten a little ratty around the edges, and we're trying to improve that. And I was telling him that the Coliseum is on that list. We're trying to improve the parts of the convention center.
Oh, you said parts.
Okay. Yes.
I thought you said parks.
Like the restrooms and the carpeting and all that.
Okay, parts, P-A-R-T, not parts.
I'm sorry. No, I wouldn't. Because
I didn't think you'd
parks.
Say to me that it's more
no,
convention.
I heard you loud and clear. I got it.
Okay. And I would just like to point out again that things like the Coliseum roof and other things on park maintenance, if we keep cutting it, those things don't get done. Thank you.
I guess with that, Mary, you know, Mr. Carway again?
This will be a little short. I want folks to really understand, as Paul and I over here dialoguing, this will be real quick. My motive and passion is for competition, okay? And it is so that our facilities can be a facility of choice so that people will want to come and rent and utilize our facilities and not walk away from them and choose to take their business somewhere else. At the end of the day, if the ambiance and the appearance of a facility is one that's acceptable, then folks will come and utilize it and will rent it, and from that utilization and rental will come new revenue that we have been missing for a period of time. Is the reason that I ramp so hard to fix the roof, because if we just kind of touch it up a little bit, you know, I put a little powder on sometimes. Those of you who use powder, I don't use my powder. But it's just a touch-up that we have to do so that when conventions come to town, then they may want to do a barbecue in the Coliseum. It has that type of ambiance. But when those planners come to town and begin to look and see, then they say, oh, no, well, we don't want that. Well, that's like a person with bad credit. It goes all over the country that, well, strike the Coliseum off your list. I think it's our responsibility to put that Coliseum on the list and to make sure at least that folks will at least give us a chance. And the only way to secure that chance is that we kind of touch it up as best we can in the areas most needed. So just wanted to say that, and I think we have that understanding now. Thank you all so very much. Thank you, Matt.
Okay, it looks like the Coliseum, that far part is a hot commodity this morning. Ryan, would you come forward, please, Ryan? And by saying that, you know, we talk about the Fair Park and we talk about economic vibrancy and economic opportunity and market. And I know the Fair Park do bring roughly about $200 million a year to the economic impact to the city of Dallas. Is there any way, Ryan, that we can look at economic to try to help assist in the makeover of the roof or whatever and marketing to do that? I'm just asking the question in general.
Mr. Atkins, I'd have to take a look at that to see what we're specifically talking about, whether or not this is a business proposition associated with the building, but we can look at it.
Okay. Thank you. Will you turn to page 7, please? The next to the last bullet, we talk about fuel reduction based on current trend and fuel price. Mary, this $3.4 million, when we purchase our fuels, is that price locked in up until September 30th?
No, sir. Fuel prices on an index that floats. When we did our original estimate for fuel, it was still on its way up and it was high. And now I've seen enough of coming down that I think we don't have to plan for quite that height. But this one really makes me nervous for a whole lot of reasons. Fuel prices and how much fuel we have impacts a lot of our services. Plus, I believe as fuel prices go up, people spend less money and our sales tax goes down. So this one's really important to watch. But I am comfortable thinking we'll be paying less for fuel than we originally had anticipated.
Right. And this goes to the end this year budget, right?
No, sir. This is we're looking at what we currently see now and projecting out to the end of next year's budget.
Right. And do we do not lock in fuel prices, right?
No, sir. We don't.
Okay. Page 13, I believe. And I also look at this, it's probably about 40% of money you're trying to find, Mary, for public safety. Again, I think public safety is very important. You know, if we don't, I know for the last 5 years, we done reduced the crime in the city. That was for the last 5 years. I think that we need to continue to look hard, you know, for that money. Page 14. Mary, you know, when we have, with our municipal court system and citation, when the county, you know, pick up a resident or someone who's had a citation and they house that person and we don't issue citation, you know, to that person through municipal court, do we pay the county money to house that person?
We have a contract with the county to provide a space in their jail for some of our prisoners, yes.
Okay, so I don't need that right now. I would love to see how much money we pay the county to house it.
Okay.
And also, with the courts, are we still looking there to update our software?
Yes, sir.
Okay, do you know when that might be in place?
Some of it in the fall and some of it toward the end of the year.
Okay. And page 16, I think Councilwoman Hoffman made a good statement, the school crossing guard. Is the county is taking over the school crossing guard as of October 1st, or when is that?
It's the school. Yeah. I think AC just said we're beginning the transition in July.
So when they officially take over?
July 1.
July 1.
So it's right around the corner.
And so is that a statement to us when they take over?
We got all that in baked in, yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, page 18. And I know we're still short with $4.3 million. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And I think that, you know, when we short this, we got to make sure that we find some kind of money. You know, the mayor got his need for growth south, and without new property tax and sales tax, we need to invest in the southern sector to make sure that we can make sure that we have developers coming to the South Dallas. Okay, I think one more. Page 30. Mayor, I think this probably the next to last bullet in funding the civilian employees' pay. I believe for the last 5 years, colleagues, we've been here, you know, they took reduction in pay, furlough days, and when you have a major corporation like we got here, the city of Dallas, that sometimes employees, you know, do more when they get incentive back and be able to pay the extra money to go on vacation to input. And I believe the morale of the employees right now, and you can see the gleam in their eyes, you know, if they're not looking at the clock at 5 o'clock at 4:59 to leave. So, Mayor, I think it's a great opportunity for you to install that pay. With that, colleagues, I know we're looking for another $24 million. And I always believe, like Ms. Resenson always said, that Mary always put a rabbit out of a hat. And I saw she had a new purse. It was much larger than the one she had last year. So I figured that she'd have another $25 million in that purse. So, Mr. Fairway, I believe we'll get that money if we could get that convention. You know, hey. And when you look at that, it's going to happen, right, Mary?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, with that, Marlon Alonzo, I know you have a quick announcement.
Are we done with the briefing? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Today, we would like to wish Ms. Linda Coop a very happy birthday. She celebrates her birthday tomorrow. And so, with that, Mr. Cadane, will you please lead us on the very famous...
Yes, sir.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Linda. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and we have a very nice selected cake that Ms. Coop suggested that we provide.
to her on her day.
Chef did great. Did a great job. Okay, Madam Secretary.
Mr. Mayor, we need to reconsider item number 2. Councilmember Davis will make the motion to reconsider item number 2 to allow the appointment of Tiffany Young to the Park Board as her nominee.
You want to make a motion? I got to take a vote to reconsider, then take the deal.
Okay. Okay.
We'll make a motion to reconsider. You got a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Aye, Carrie.
Not a motion?
The motion, I would like to move approval to add Tiffany A. Young to the Park and Recreation Board for District 7. To the list that we approved this morning.
To be added to the original motion.
To be added to the original list from this morning.
Okay. Is there any question? Okay, I have a second. Who did the second?
Ms. Carway.
Ms. Carway. They had a motion?
So moved.
All in favor? And opposed?
Okay, that's it. Okay. Come to your next briefing.
And before we go to the next briefing, right, on housing, Ms. Coop going to excuse herself because she had a conflict. And that showed that Ms. Coop is leaving the room. Don't take the case. Don't take the case. And before we do this, we're going to go into executive session. It'll probably take 10 minutes. And this is 9:11:03 a.m. June 20, 2012. The City Council is now meeting in closed session according with Section 551-071 of the Texas Open Meeting Act to seek legal counsel and advice from the City Attorney concerning group housing facility regulation enforcement. Should take about 10 minutes. It is 11:56, and we are back from closed session. And make sure to be noted that Linda Coop was not in the closed session. And the briefing is group housing facilities. And is there any question about this briefing? Everybody read the material? Is there no question? Okay. With that, to the Secretary, let's call for open speakers.
Good afternoon. Your afternoon speakers will begin with Maggie Myers, Carol Collins, and Claudia Meyer. I'll first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during the session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timers on both walls. Please address your comments to Mayor Atkins. When your time is up, please allow the next speaker their turn. Maggie Myers. Not present. Carol Collins. Not present. Claudia Meyer. Not present. Ozumba Lost. Not present. Robert Ceccarelli. Robert Ceccarelli will be followed by Richard Sheridan and Gwen Wooten.
Yes, Robert Ceccarelli, 2218 Norwood Drive. I don't see the people here I need to address it to, but I need to make something up. Last week I talked about Diane Issa, the lady Mr. Dallas Homeless Alliance. I haven't heard from her, and I usually do, and I'm concerned about her safety right now. Last time I said she was found on a bench, sleeping. I certainly hope someone can hear step up to the plate and find out what happened to her.
please. I usually hear from her all the time. She's the one that chairs the Met MDHA meetings, and I'm concerned about her safety and her housing. Anyone who sleeps on a bench in the middle of the city is not safe. You're endangering yourself, and she could be. I don't know what's going to. Well, I don't know what happened to her, but I'm asking someone to talk to Mike Fianza and find her, and please let me know what happened or check into it. Thank you very much. Also, I'd like to talk about the school board meeting next week. One thing I'm concerned about, the mayor's not here, is that he kept on talking about teachers, about holding them accountable. Well, the mayor is about 5 years too late on that. What he did when he was in Florida is really made DISD worse, because the teachers right now are very, very frustrated with being threatened to be fired. I mentioned this earlier. And what needs to be done is someone can relay this message to Mr. Carraway and Ms. Davis, is what they did with the saggy pants, what had the media event. What could be even more important is to have a single mother and their child that comes from a regular school like Pinkston or Lincoln or Madison, and make the point that if you have strong parents or have one parent, it would be a mighty influence for that child to succeed. Of course, parental involvement in DISD is very, very poor. I was at Brian Adams, 10 parents showed up for the restructuring meeting. Colleen Nelson, who was with the Morning News, she wrote an editorial that she visited a high school and no parents showed up. So I'm going to be speaking about that next week. I was at the retreat at DISD headquarters. They talked about parental involvement, but they didn't mention about how poor or how they're going to get the parents involved in the schools. So, Mr. Carraway, Ms. Davis, please do that same event. It'll be very, very successful. It'll make an impression to other parents in the city and motivate their children to succeed. I thought that was very successful what he did with the saggy pants, and this will be even more important. Thank you very much.
Richard Sheridan, not present. Gwen Wooten, not present. LaCardia London, not present. Kyla London, not present. William Hopkins, not present. Lakeisha Johnson, not present. And Lakeisha Gilbreth, not present.
I'll second. All in favor, it is 12:02. The brief is adjourned.